Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's programs, Brooks Bentz, who is President of Supply Chain Consulting at Transplace. And today we're going to talk about a portfolio management approach to transportation optimization. What is portfolio management as it relates to transportation optimization, and why is that more important than ever today? Well, that's just some of the questions that we're going to explore here with Brooks, who I'm sure many of you know Brooks has a long and successful career in the supply chain industry. So certainly very appreciative of him making the time to be with us today and really share his perspective on what's happening in the transportation industry today and really kind of how companies can take a better approach, if you will, to optimizing the transportation operation. So that's really the heart of what we're going to discuss today. Just a reminder for those of you that are joining us live today that, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question or a comment for Brooks as we're kind of having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button or via the chat feature. And I'll keep an eye on it. And if it's a good and appropriate question and we have time, I'll be more than happy to, incorporate it as part of the conversation. If you are joining us as a visitor, just a reminder that you do have to sign in before asking a question. So with that, Brooks, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. Happy to be here today.
So Brooks, like I said, I think for many of us that have been in the industry for a while, we know of Brooks Bentz and kind of your work in the industry, but I'm sure there are folks that may not know about your background. And one of the things I like to do on Talking Logistics when we have a first-time guest is really get an understanding of how and why you got involved in this industry to begin with. So why don't we start there? If you can briefly tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics, and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Transplace.
Well, we seem to have stalled, Adrian. I don't know if you.
I can see and hear you. Can you see me, Brooks?
Yes, you froze there for a moment. So to answer your question, I started out in the transportation business right out of high school as a brakeman on the railroad and spent 23 years or so in the industry in trucking and railroading and intermodal services and third-party logistics, and then went into consulting and spent the last 21 years with Anderson Consulting and Accenture, and was leading the transportation practice for our supply chain team, our global supply chain team. So after 40 some odd years banging around the transportation business, I thought it was really a good idea to focus on transportation as a career. The other thing I wanted to point out is that I am in our Frisco headquarters in Tom Sanderson's office, who's our CEO, which is why there's a Red Sox plaque behind my head. And being a Yankee fan, I've been trying to maneuver so that I can block that out. But in any case, it's really a treat to be able to do this. I think transportation for those of us who are in it is a compelling career and never lacks for diversity and interest.
No, absolutely. I thought you put that Red Sox frame back there for my benefit, being here in the Boston area. So I know Tom is a big Red Sox fan, and of course we're not having a good year this year. But anyway, it's always nice to have a friendly rivalry with the Yankees.
Yes.
Obviously you've had a great career in the industry. You've seen it evolve over the years in the different roles that you've had. And in your current role, you have the opportunity to work with a lot of supply chain and transportation executives. So why don't we start there? I mean, what are you hearing, seeing from customers and executives today? I mean, what's top of mind of them for today, and what challenges and opportunities are they facing?
Okay, I joined Transplace earlier in the year to sort of formalize our consulting business into a supply chain consulting practice that's entirely focused in supply chain. And to address the question you just asked, I don't think the priorities in supply chain have really changed all that much at the macro level. It's still a lot about how do I improve service and take out cost. I think the overarching end goal is how do I improve the customer experience, because that's really why we're in business, whether we're manufacturing, providing services or whatever. So that's the ultimate goal, and how can supply chain help do that more efficiently? I think what has happened is the speed of change has gotten much more rapid. And I heard an example, actually a couple recently, that I thought were instructive. One is that if you took a car from my earlier days, say a 1972 VW Beetle, and you applied the change in technology to that today, that car would be produced for $1.40 and it would get 400,000 miles per gallon. So that's a way of illustrating how quickly technology has changed. One other illustration is when iPhone 6 came out, whatever it was, about 6 months ago or so, they sold 10 billion of those in 3 days. And the interesting part of that was that the computing capacity of those iPhones that were sold in 3 days exceeded the entire global computing capacity in 1995. So I look at mine, and my first computer was had a hard drive that was 40 megabytes, and that was sort of high end for the time. And now I have an iPhone 5, I haven't upgraded, that has 54 gigabytes on it. So I think what's happening, the only reason I mention those things is to illustrate the fact that that the change has always been with us, but it is much more rapid today. And so in order to be successful in supply chain management, you have to be much more nimble and much more agile. And further to that, I think our belief is that next generation productivity gains are going to come from technology. So if you think about transportation productivity gains from an earlier day, you went from a 35-foot trailer to a 40-foot trailer to a 45-foot, 43, and now some people want larger. But there's diminishing returns on how big you can make a truck or a rail car or a vessel. And so, you know, our thesis is that the bigger leaps in productivity gains technology. And I think that's the thing that a lot of traditional supply chain is beginning to embrace but haven't fully yet. And I think it's part of the answer. It's not the entire answer. But it is a core foundational element. And try building a house without putting the foundation under it at the beginning and putting it in built, much more difficult. So I think having a good foundation, technology, business processes is really what people are looking to achieve.
That's a great point, Brooks. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, that's something that I've been hearing from supply chain logistics executives as well, is that that rapid pace of change has really been, you know, kind of the main challenge that they're trying to, you know, keep up with. And I think those examples you gave or analogies you made are you know, right on point. You know, certainly you see things like, go ahead.
No, just one other illustration, I think, to what you just said is, I think if you look at it, if you don't respond, what happens is that you get outmaneuvered or get run around. And I think, you know, BlackBerry versus the iPhone is a good example, right? They had BlackBerry was the dominant PDA for a very long time, didn't adapt and change very well, and got rapidly supplanted by the iPhone. I think Uber's technology and operating model, you know, has really become viral in many parts of the world, in terms of surpassing conventional passenger transportation. So if you lag behind, people will pass you, and you'll be you'll be one of those. Remember those guys? Whatever happened to them?
You know, exactly. And I've had the you can almost say the misfortune of having firsthand experience in my career path in terms of that happening. I started my career at Motorola, which really doesn't exist anymore. And then I worked briefly at Polaroid. So, you know, those are two classic examples there of companies that, you know, were not able to respond fast enough or see the future, you know, very clearly to really adapt their business models to make those changes. And certainly today in the supply chain logistics world, you know, you see things like omni-channel and same-day delivery and so on and so forth, really putting pressure on that time component and that customer experience that kind of adds another layer of complexity, if you will, or urgency to really the objectives of transportation executives. So let me let's go now to kind of the title of the presentation here. When it comes to transportation optimization, I know you and I have talked in the past, and you advocate taking a portfolio management approach. So what do you mean by that, and how does it differ from the way companies have traditionally approached it? And if you could just speak a little bit louder, so just I noticed in before the audio was cutting in and out a little bit, so just speak a little bit louder, that way the mic will capture it.
Okay, well, I think a very good question. We have referred to this as holistic multimodal transportation optimization, which is a real mouthful. I think portfolio management describes it equally as well, and I think it's taking a view of transportation all in or holistically. And I don't think of it as trucks and trains and boats and planes. It's really a network of capacity that is available to move freight, and there's a network of freight that is available to be moved. And I think while optimization is a much overused word, in its true sense, it really can't occur in modal silos nearly as effectively as it can when it is applied across the patch. And so the portfolio management approach basically says, if I have a lot of freight, if I'm a Walmart or a Kohl's or a Rite Aid or no matter who, manufacturer, retailer, whatever, I can identify the freight flows that I have, outbound, inbound, interfacility freight flows. I have data that supports me knowing about that business. What I can't identify readily is the capacity available to move that freight. And real optimization is the act of and process of using the power of those overlapping networks to the greatest extent possible. So we do that through an exercise called expressive competition, where we allow the carrier community, the service provider community, can be 3PLs, can be LTL, truckload, rail, intermodal, whatever, ocean, air, to examine the freight flows and then provide the optimum capacity to meet the demand. And that's really a simplistic comment or concept, but what really becomes difficult is the sheer volume of transactions that you have to manage. And that requires you to have very high level, very robust technology. We can get into that in detail, but we have done projects where we've had over 3 billion items, I'm sorry, 3 million items that had to be optimized. And clearly, that's not something you can do on spreadsheets or access databases. So I think one of the challenges is in the past is that companies have traditionally managed transportation in silos. I'm going to look at LTL, I'm going to look at truckload, I'm going to look at air and ocean, and do them all separately. And while the overlap of those may not seem to be great, overlaps do exist. For example, even air shipments and ocean shipments hit the highway or the railroad at some point in their movement. So looking at it as a complete network and figuring out how best to optimize that network and what the value of that network is to the service providers as they express it in the pricing that they give you to move the freight is really a vital way to do it. It is difficult though, and it is stymied in several instances. Probably the most significant is the lack of good, reliable data for baselining. So how do I understand exactly what I'm doing today? Otherwise, I really can't define I'm going to change it, and how I'm going to improve it. So you need that, and that's a very, very difficult challenge, even in this era of big data. Actually, it's sort of exacerbating it because there's mountains and mountains of data, but not all that much intelligence coming out of it. So how do I actually use this data, and how do I make sure it's accurate and timely? Oftentimes, companies do not have the strategic imperative. We're visiting with a client next week, and today, I said, so who's backing this, this play? And the CEO. And, that is the kind of strategic imperative that is important when it's on the CEO's agenda. It's important to everybody. If it is not on the agenda of leadership, then going through a process like I'm describing is more difficult to do. I think you also have companies that involve in terms of geography or multiple divisions, so it's difficult to consolidate and get accurate data across those and get buy-in unless you have some strategic imperative that says, hey guys, we're going to go do this and get on board. And then you need the willingness and the ability to invest the time and effort and money to execute against one of these projects, which are, you know, large scale and time consuming. And you have to overcome the organizational and cultural barriers that may hamper you in doing that. And they can be, you know, will we treat Europe differently than we treat the Americas versus Asia? Will we treat divisions differently? So how do you bring all of that together? I don't think there are too many people that would say, well, we can't have one global air freight contract, or we can't have with Lufthansa or KLM, or we can't have one global ocean contract with Maersk or a Hapag. We need different ones for each division and each geography. I think there's a sort of a common sense play here, but oftentimes that's exactly what's happening. These things are done in pieces and not stitched together in a way that allows you to look at your entire portfolio. And that's really one of the goals we have, is to help people manage across the board. And the output of that, aside from the benefits, the financial benefits and the improvements of service that you get, and the much higher reliability and capacity, because you have people that are playing in the field that they want to play in and hauling freight they want to haul, you also are looking at much more capabilities, performance, how you're doing in the marketplace and how you're doing plan, and that's something that everybody seems to know, but oftentimes it can take you months to figure that out. And this mechanism, this process, allows you to make a more timely response to see how you're doing your plan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of conversation, you know, going back to the point that we were talking about earlier in terms of, you know, managing that rapid pace of change. Part of the challenge there is, you know, making smarter decisions faster, right? And part of the making smarter decisions is really, you know, going back to what folks have been talking about for a long time, which is, you know, breaking down those silos, right? And I think what's interesting is a lot of times we talk about breaking down the silos between, let's say, transportation and warehousing and inventory management and manufacturing and so on and so forth. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think what you're kind of talking about here is that, and I think it's a reality, is that there actually are silos within, you know, transportation itself, that whether it's, you know, looking at inbound separately than outbound, looking at international separately than domestic, looking at inter-facility moves separately, so on and so forth. And, you know, there are missed opportunities by not taking a more holistic and integrated approach to both how perhaps you approach network design, in terms of how you approach procurement, and then how you approach, you know, day-to-day management. Is that a kind of a fair way of summarizing what you said there?
Yeah, I think that's right on. I think it's a difficult thing. I guess the puzzling thing to me, you know, I've been out of the industry side of and in the consulting side of things for a long time now, but the silo mentality, I think, exists. It's largely human nature. It's comfortable. What I find interesting is the dynamic that says, yes, we want to break down silos, but the lack of real action to actually do it. And I think in transportation, it's relatively easier than in other areas. So saying, I want to look at truckload transportation for five divisions across North America, you know, it's a pretty sensible thing to do rather than doing them all individually. Yet, oftentimes, upper management will not mandate that occur. And if you don't push that, you have people say, well, I'm not going to participate. And I've been through this in, you know, multiple times where we say, well, it makes sense to have all of this volume in play, and have people with significant volume saying, I just don't want to do it. And nobody's stepping up and saying, yes, but it makes sense and we need to do it as an enterprise. And I think, you know, until that happens, you know, it's going to be much more difficult to get the wring the optimum value out of the network, not only in terms of price, but in terms of how you manage capacity, which is a very topical. How you improve service.
You already, you know, touched upon this a little bit, some of the things you talked about in terms of, I think you mentioned earlier, data and big data and the challenge around that as being kind of one of the challenges around taking a portfolio management approach. I mean, can you maybe to underscore some of the key things? I mean, what do you see as some of the main building blocks that are required to take a portfolio management approach, and kind of how do you overcome some of those challenges that might be in the way of doing this?
Well, I think what you get into right away is the key foundational element is good data. And almost everybody has data, right? Because you're moving freight and you're paying for freight, so you have a record of the shipment being originated and terminated, and you have an invoice for it. So in theory, the ability to get that data and use it to analyze what's going on, and are you following the plan that you set out for yourselves, and are the costs in line, and is the service doing what it's supposed to be doing? I think the data is generally there. You need it at the at a granular level, shipment history level, bill of lading level, and you need to be able to look at it for a period of time, usually a year, so that you can look at seasonal variation and trends in it. So that's one key building block. And it's probably the most critical one, because if you're dealing with faulty data, you're going to have faulty results. Now, you can extrapolate and, you reduce the level of accuracy and efficacy when you do that, but you can do it as long as you know what's good and what's bad. You really need to do a diagnostic of business processes and practices so that you can look at how you're running the business today. Our goal is, when we work with clients, is how do you ease the administrative burden? How do you standardize and simplify as much as possible to allow for people to spend more time strategizing, figuring out how to improve things rather than chasing paper around? So that's important. I think in order to get the market to tell you what your market basket of services is worth, what is it going to cost to run this network? Traditionally, but our approach is going way beyond reach. Too many RFPs that I've looked at say, okay, here's a bunch of lanes. And that's not the approach that we take. We take a much more strategic approach to, first of all, looking at all the practices, standards, simplifying, sure that all of that is embedded in documentation that. So that people are well equipped with what is our standard contract look like? What are we looking to buy, and how are we looking to buy it, and how are we looking to pay for it, and how do we manage fuel, and how do we manage accessorial charges, so that it's very, very clear what we want to buy. And further to that, how much information can we provide you to help you make better choices on what services you want to provide and at what prices? So I need to be able to tell you where my are, what they're operating. So they have these little niggly requirements that, if you don't know them, may impact your ability to serve as you desire. So, for example, we had one client where we had to ask if they had dock locks at the distribution center because we had hydraulic lift gates on the trailers and you couldn't back into a dock with a dock lock. A bit of a small detail, but something that was necessary to know. We had another client that had a drop lot where you would drop trailers into the trailer pool, but you needed to make appointments in advance, which is a fairly unusual. So you needed to know that. We had another one that had a running reefer requirement that had to be fueled over a weekend to keep the vehicle cool. If you didn't know that, then you couldn't price that effectively and accurately if you wanted to attract that business. So being explicit and detailed and accurate across the board is vital to getting good responses. And then I think the last item that you have to overcome is how do you actually do the optimization. You need very, very powerful optimization technology. I mentioned the one earlier where we did 3 million separate items of air freight at 20,000 lanes, and great combinations between 650 air stations to serve. And so it was a very, very complex, and there were 324 or 34 airlines involved. So it was an enormous challenge, and clearly not something that you could do by seat of the pants. And then you have to have a technology that's powerful enough to run the different scenarios you want to look at and how you want to move forward and run them quickly enough. When I started using optimization technology back in the last decade of the last century, it would take us a week to run a scenario. Now we do them in a minute. So it's almost like a video game compared to a root canal. So I think all of those things enter into how you manage this process and do it effectively. And get good results.
Yeah, no, those are all great points. So let's talk now. And you kind of gave some examples there. I don't know if you've got other kind of, you know, share some other use cases or customer examples of how taking a portfolio management approach, you know, kind of delivers a value. And then if you can, your audio was cutting out a little bit there. I think it might be a function of how close you're kind of standing to, you know, talking to the microphone. So maybe if you could just focus on facing the computer, that might help. Thank you.
Okay. So the last thing I did want to also call out, I think, in summary to the last point that I left out, is that you really need a well-thought-out, clearly defined process for running this entire program. And I think that's vital so that everybody understands the rules of engagement and how to use those tools effectively to being successful in a project or a process like that. In terms of case examples, I think the one that, you know, that is emblematic is the one I was referring to with the huge number of alternatives, options, lanes, and so forth. And I think the notion of being able to use what we refer to as expressive competition to allow carriers to and service providers to tell you, the buyer, what freight is attractive to them and how to do it is really the most efficacious way to get results. And I would tell you that in more than 21 years of doing engagements of this type, there isn't one instance where we didn't deliver substantial value, positive value. To put that into numbers, the average is in the 8 to 12% range, and that is the cost of running that network of what we refer to as the in-scope controlled spend on freight. So an 8 to 12% reduction per year, and typically more than 1 year, can be two or three. The lowest was 5%, and the upper end was around 30%. So there's value in the network out there. And I think all you have to do is look at operating efficiency. Despite all of everybody's best efforts, if you look at truckload transportation, for example, these guys all know their business. They know how to operate efficiently, but they're still running in the range of anywhere from 10 to 12 or 13% empty miles. So there is excess capacity out there. The challenge is, how do I map that capacity to the demand more efficiently? And that is really where the gain in productivity is going to come from, and that is where we think technology is going to play a role. If I look at Uber, in the passenger environment, Uber solved the problem of matching capacity to demand, right? I'm demand standing at the airport, and I have a way of attracting capacity to move me to my destination. We worked on Uber Freight version for Accenture, and I think that model is something that going to occur. There are several players now in the market trying to do exactly that. And really, if that comes to fruition in the near term here, you're going to see a much more efficient operation, less deadheading, less empty miles, more efficient use of assets, which is really what everybody is all about. So I think those kinds of things are the best way to optimize large, complex networks, and it's regardless of what mode you're talking about or what kind of product you're making, right? That's the approach that you need to take.
You know, and you kind of touched upon this already a little bit, but you know, if this is you know, this portfolio management approach is you know, provides, you know, much better benefits or you know, opportunities for savings and service improvements, so on and so forth. Why aren't more companies doing this? I mean, and do you see kind of the tide turning in terms of more companies adopting this approach?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing they haven't done yet is hired a good supply chain consultancy. But I think there are the things that weigh in here too. And there's inertia and tradition, right? We do a truckload bid every year, and we do it on Excel spreadsheets, and we always seem to get benefits, so we continue to do that. There is a lack of strategic imperative and support for doing a much broader, larger scale, enterprise-wide effort. They are expensive to do. They take a lot of time. They take a lot of resources. The one I referred to you with the 3 million items in it was a year-long project with a team of 35 people from the client side and 10 from the consulting side, but the benefits were enormous after the project was done, and it changed the business processes for the way the company operated its air freight businesses. The other things that are hampering, I think, doing this are lack of reliable data, which we've hit on several times. And also the lack of resources. If you're going to do a project like this, it's, you know, taking, as I mentioned the last one, it took you know, a large number of people for a very long time, not all of them full time, but a lot of them full time to do that work, and not everybody has those resources readily available to do that with the right skills. And the last issue, I think, is change management. People perceive it as a risk. What if it doesn't work? Am I betting my job? Am I betting the company? You know, trying something new or trying something different has always got a risk quotient to it. And I think, you know, you have to be willing to go out and do that. And not everybody has crossed that bridge yet. It's very, very interesting to me that when I look at the surveys that come out from Aberdeen and others, the percentage of people who are buying freight capacity, not using technology to help them do it, tactical approach to a very strategic problem. I think that'll change over time, and we're here to help roll that ball down the field if we can.
You know, we're running short on time here, so I've got a couple of more questions, but I just want to remind those of you that are watching that if you do have a question for Brooks, now would be the time to submit it. And again, if you are joining us as a visitor, you do have to sign in first before you can submit a question. So Brooks, we've kind of talked about the shipper side of things. I mean, what is the carrier perspective on this approach? I mean, does it ultimately result in better shipper carrier relationships?
Well, I think, you know, having been on the carrier side and having to participate in situations where I was competing for freight, I can say that I don't think anybody relishes the idea. If you're an incumbent, you don't relish the idea of having to see your business competed. If you're the new guy, then you're always out looking for more business. And so I think there's that dynamic at work. I think what's happened, though, is with the rise of technology, optimization technology, and automated RFPs and that sort of thing, is that carriers are getting very much acclimated to this as a way of improving their lot in life and improving their business. So I think their general reaction is it's a fact of life. We have to participate in these events. I think if you believe in what we've been talking about here, the carriers come out with a better set of business than they had before. In the experience that we've had, typically 80% of the incumbent carriers remain in the portfolio. But what's interesting is that the business shifts. They don't handle the business that they handled before. They handle different businesses more attractive to them. And that leads to a more sustained business model, less turnover, and frankly, it results in better gains for both parties. Carriers are getting freight that's more attractive to them, and the shippers are getting better reliability. reliability, better service, and less churn.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, in my experience, you know, talking to shippers and carriers as well, I think that's been my observation as well. And what I've heard from them is, you know, a lot of the incumbent players do end up returning, but the, you know, it's better aligned, if you will, the business that they're having better aligned with their network than perhaps, you know, taking a more fragmented approach or having more limited visibility to what the shippers' demands are would have resulted in. You know, so let's wrap it up, and kind of as a way to wrap up then, you know, what advice, you know, would you give to companies looking to take a portfolio management approach to transportation optimization, and what steps should they take, you know, in the near term here, and maybe what mistakes should they try to avoid?
Well, so other than hiring the supply chain consultancy of choice, I think the steps that you really need to go through are, if you buy into the process, if you think it makes sense, you have to go and look and see what your data set looks like today. Is it reliable? Can you get it? Can you get it quickly? And that really is probably step one. I think step two is developing the strategy along the lines that we're talking about of managing this as a portfolio and making the business case to upper management to invest the time and the effort and the resources and the money to go do it. That leads to getting the support strategic imperative, if you will, to go ahead and execute something like that. Whether you do it on your own, many of our clients are fully capable of doing this kind of project on their own. They simply do not have the extra arms and legs to do it. And so they essentially rent the talent from people like us to come in and assist their teams in order to do that. And then when it's over, it becomes, you know, it's a variable cost model. Don't have people on the payroll that do it. There are some companies that are big enough with enough spend and enough import that they have a team that just does this all the time. And, you know, those are probably, there's one out in the Midwest, a large CPG company, and they're expert at it, and they do it all the time, and they have a full-time team. Not everybody. But I think those are the things that you have to go through. You have to have the data. You have to have executive support. And then you can advance the ball. Now, what the strategy is, I think, has to be determined by individual companies. But you would typically, so for example, in the retail space, you would want to involve your merchant buyers or category managers to say, look, here's what we're trying to do, and here's how this could impact you in terms of getting the product to the store shelf for less money, improve performance, reduce stockouts, take inventory out of the pipeline. I think there's an impact across the flexibility and logistics that helps build the business case. So those are the kinds of things you need to do. I think the mistakes that get made often are, I can't afford 6 months or 9 months to do this project, so I'm going to try and do it fast. I don't have the money to license the technology or to hire a consultant, so I'm going to do it with what I've got. We'll do it on a part-time basis. Oh, and by the way, that means I can't do it all, so I'll just do LTL right now. And I'll show some benefits, and I'll come back and do truckload later. And so I think it becomes it gets watered down into a suboptimal solution that never really changes the game. And I think this is an era where you need to change.
Yeah, and with that, I think that's a great way to kind of wrap this up. I mean, you got to look for ways to change the game in light of, you know, the rapid changing environment that we're all in. You know, Brooks, you know, like I always say at the end of every episode, we always manage to just scratch the surface on these topics. But I think we definitely raised some good points and some good food for thought for those folks watching today. So, again, thank you very much for making the time for being with us today.
Thank you for the invitation. It was a pleasure being here.
And I want to thank all of you who joined us live today. We didn't get any questions for Brooks, but if you are watching this episode on demand, and you do have some questions for Brooks, you can find the episode on talkinglogistics.com, and you can post your question or comment there. And I'm sure Brooks will be more than happy to reply via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.